Louise Bedford here. Just before we kick off with today's show, I wanted to let you know that for 1 week only, you can get up to 84% off a selection of my most popular trading education products available through tradinggame.com.au. Make no mistake, your financial future is in your hands. So check out the audios, videos, and study courses that I have available at tradinggame.com.au. Now's your chance to develop your skills as a trader for up to 84% off, but only for the next week. Let's get on with the show. Louise Bedford here from the Talking Trading Podcast. This is how traders excel. Traders who can hone their resilience so that they can bounce back quickly from knocks are the ones who do the best in the markets. And often we think of this skill as being intuitive, maybe something that people are born with. However, research has shown that this skill can be trained into you so that you can become more resilient as a trader. And that is going to be my topic for high performance trading for this episode. Now, I want to kick off with a little story. When I was in primary school in grade 6, we were told that Dermot Brereton was going to come in by helicopter. Oh my gosh, so exciting. I barracked for Hawthorn, I still do. And Dermot, of course, played for Hawthorn. If you're overseas, this is the national obsession. We are talking about football here, AFL. Now, Dermot flew in a big helicopter. All of the kids crowded around him. We all shoved our autograph books over underneath his face and he signed. And I just have these memories of his blonde hair flowing back and his huge smile. And he signed my autograph. It was so exciting. We got a chance to ask Dermot questions because we were the big grade 6 kids. And I do remember one of the questions was, how do you train and how much do you train? And he said he trained 7 days a week. And I'm like, oh my gosh, 7 days a week. But he said some of those training sessions involved getting a massage, going for a walk, and having a sleep. Now, let's put this into context for traders. Often we do need to recover from the knocks in the market. And that's why I'm about to interview Simon Carney, who I'll introduce in just a moment. But Simon, I'd love to hear your views. Firstly, I know that you know Dermot, which is exciting, but also I'd like to hear how you feel professional athletes recover when they're getting over that extended athletic performance that they have to give to perform at the top of their game.
Yeah, Louise, it's as important as the pre-season. Certainly, you know, you put a lot of work into the pre-season, but in season, a lot of the work that you do in season, certainly outside of performance, is recovering. And that's the main aim for the first 72 hours after a game. So if we're talking about AFL, which is 2 hours long, lots of kilometres, lots of high-speed kilometres, lots of hits and bumps, your body does take a toll. So these days it's changed a fair bit from when Dermy was recovering in the 80s and early 90s. But certainly, you know, sleep, massage, as you said, hot and cold baths, nutrition and hydration are really, really important. But it's a lot like the old saying, you know, don't take a sore back lying down. You've got to get up and get moving. So that's a really important part, but there's very much a threshold of how much moving and how quick you move post-game to not bring on any other injuries. But we'll talk about it, you know, as we go through our podcast today, but certainly there's, you know, the non-negotiables you need to do from a physical point of view of the hot and colds and the swims and the massage and hydration, nutrition, but certainly the emotional recovery is just as important and can be very much customized to suit the individual because we're all very different.
And there are definite parallels with the trading world. Whether you have made a windfall profit and you need to downregulate your emotions of hope and greed, or whether you've suffered a loss and you need to bounce back and recover to be able to get to that equilibrium as well, there are definite correlations between these two fields. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about Simon, and Simon, do fill in any blanks here. Simon, you're from readiness.com.au. Now, I'm so glad that you're here because I know that you're the co-founder of Readiness. I'd like you to tell us a bit more about that in just a moment. But you're a well-being technology company specializing in helping business leaders like Telstra and Jayco, just to mention some of the big names, unlock performance through technology and well-being. Now, your philosophy over the last 20 years has been looking after elite high-performance sports people and designing solutions at the intersection of psychology, well-being, and performance. Before Readiness, Simon, you led high performance programs with elite sporting organizations, monitoring and improving all key areas of well-being. And you are ideally placed to help my traders. So, Simon, welcome to the Talking Trading Podcast.
Louise, thank you so much for having me. And that's an unbelievable intro.
I did my homework. As you know, we have talked in the past, we've interviewed on a different platform together, which has been such a pleasure. Did I leave any gaps in that introduction?
What would you like people to know? Yeah, it's certainly my last 22 odd years has been in the high performance areas of AFL for a couple of teams, the NRL in Melbourne Storm. Went on the tennis tour with elite players for about 6 years, and in NBL as well, all based out of Australia. So had a really sort of good experience across a diverse list of sports, which have its own specific speed humps we need to get over. But certainly at the end of the day, we're just dealing with human beings in their performance from a strength and conditioning, a recovery, a well-being point of view. So we've basically bought all of those strategies from elite sport in proactively assessing the holistic well-being of athletes, not just physical health, but sleep health and mental health, and brought those strategies out to the real world and basically, treat everyone like they're elite athletes.
I love that. Yeah, traders are elite athletes in their own right. Even though we're not physically exercising our body, we definitely have that mind-body connection. Yep. Now, Simon, I've been reading this book, which is Peak Performance. Yes. It's a fantastic book. I was reading last night about Roger Bannister, who was the gentleman that cracked that 4 minute mile, which is so exciting. I was seeing that they're in the lead up to creating that amazing Guinness Book of Records record. There were people that were just over, it was like 4 minutes and 1 second, 4 minutes and 3 seconds. And this gentleman who finally cracked it did understand that it was within his reach. He didn't quite make it in any of those tests that he was leading up to that particular event. But do you know what he did? He's an English gentleman. He went to Scotland for 2 weeks with his mates. They hiked, they saw beautiful trees, they enjoyed each other's company. And when he got back to England, he decided just to do a couple of little runs before the event in the 2 days prior. And then when he ran, he was completely fresh. And he accredits that recovery process and that downtime before that big race, the regeneration, he credits that as to why he managed to get that record. And it was really close to, I'll just get the actual number. He ran it in 3 minutes, 59 and 4/10 of a second.
It's amazing, isn't it?
My goodness. Yeah. So he really had the courage to rest. What are your thoughts about what Roger did? And is there a lesson that we can apply to our own lives?
Yeah, I think, performance is performance. It's whether you're on the sporting field, the running track, or trading. We all need to perform in our professional lives and personal lives as well with family and friends. So what was really interesting there, Louise, I said, he went away for 2 weeks with friends. It's all about that connection. And I think, we really need to it's an undervalued and underestimated part of recovery and performance is connecting with the people that make you feel good. And so his ability there to unload for 2 weeks before having a crack at there is quite common in tapering. It's called tapering there to decrease all your workloads, but still just keep tinkering along. But it's no different to what we need to do in our professional world and private world as well. If we've got, you know, big events coming up, you don't want to hit those events tired. So you need to hit those events fresh. So if you know in the trading world, you've got some big meetings and big conferences that, you know, are based overseas and you're still in Australia or wherever, you know, you want to make sure that the days leading into those big events that you are fresh and ready to perform, because performance is performance. So he did the right thing there. And we certainly, in my previous world with sport, we would do most of our workload sort of midweek in season, in training, and then really back it off into the game on the weekend. And that's from a week to week. But then if you're hitting finals where you really need to be at your peak, we certainly just slow things down towards the back end of the year with training just to really regenerate, as we mentioned before. So we've got enough energy to perform bigger and better than we have the entire year. So no different in the real world is the take home is if you know you've got a big event coming up, whether it's an emotional event or a physical event, be smart with your strategies and your scheduling heading into that.
I do like that. Actually, I haven't heard that word before, tapering. I want to perhaps pop that into a trading perspective in a lower level way. We're talking about tapering for a high performance output in your definition, but the other way that traders need to consider is to not come off the boil too much. Now, in my world, there's a macro filter. This macro filter tells me when to trade and when not to. So when the trend is going up, we enter in positions, and I determine that by looking at the all odds. If the all odds is going up, then I can enter new trades. Trouble is, when the all odds is going down, you end up having some downtime as a trader. So you have to use that time very carefully. And one of the things I would suggest as a try this at home tip for all of my traders is that when that macro goes off and you are not trading, make sure you continue running your scans, because you get out of that habit so easily. I would give most traders 2 weeks and then they're out of the habit. And for you to be able to ramp back up and perform at the top of your game immediately is an unreasonable expectation. That's why I really feel traders should be running their scans every single week, regardless of whether they're going to act on those scans or not. I guess you see that in the sporting world as well.
That's where, really good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm learning more at trading as we go through here. But, an analogy to sort of use is you can't keep spending. And from a financial analogy sort of thing with your well-being is the same. You can't keep spending. You've got to put some deposits back into your well-being. And if you've got, as you mentioned there, Louise, downtimes or times where you don't need to be at your peak, in order for you to be at your peak and ramping up going forward, you may not know how long that ramp up phase is going to go for. So you may not get a window for downtime for another couple of months. I'm not sure, but making sure that when you're on that downtime, you are putting deposits, well-being deposits, back into yourself to allow yourself to really perform well over an extended period of time coming up. So that's again in sport, it's the same. It's why you have off seasons. You then have progressive pre-seasons, and you have buys and breaks and all this in season as well. It's so full on that when you do get those chances to tools down and look after yourself, you have to take it. Otherwise, you'll pay the consequence later on.
And I think one of those consequences can be burnout, because if you are running hell for leather all the time and you're at that peak level, it can actually take its toll. It isn't just an emotional thing, it's physical as well. Even for traders, emotionally you can get fatigued, decision fatigue, cuts in, you're not making clear decisions, and you're more likely to enter into suboptimal trades. Now, you will have seen burnout with your athletes. What are the types of symptoms, and what do you suggest for people who are potentially suffering burnout?
Well, but yeah, it's a huge risk, and it's the end result of not listening to your body. So certainly, you know, you tend to get physical symptoms before the emotional fatigue. But again, everyone's a bit different. But, you know, things to look out for is repeated sickness, a lack of motivation to get up and get things going, you know, just a lack in energy. Things seem a lot harder to do when normally it's a lot easier to do. Engagement's a big one. You know, one of the key figures that we see before burnout is where you're normally really super engaged and excited in certain aspects of your role, you can't find that engagement, high levels of engagement again. And your overall anxiety really picks up as well. So the take home out of all of that is let's try and be in a proactive mindset and nip those in the bud nice and early before they lead to burnout, because that is the ultimate's going to be burnout or a significant and severe illness. So having a bit of self-awareness and knowing what your triggers are around that, around those symptoms that we just mentioned there, and then you'll know yourself. You just know when you're not quite on. It's about what we do from then on, you know, with your schedules and some positive coping strategies that we can do there to prevent that. Because once you hit burnout or that, you know, severe illness, you're either off work completely or you are, you know, you're at far below sub-maximal performance, and that can be some pretty expensive poor decisions that you'll make later on.
And it's almost like if you don't pay attention, your body will make you pay attention.
Pay attention, yeah. Either or, you're going to end up paying attention.
That's it.
You may as well do it as early as you can, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I've noticed in my own performance is if my energy is running low, if I'm feeling like, oh, my gosh, sometimes as well, my little thought bubble says, I don't have time for this, when somebody adds on just that one extra level of commitment from me, that they're expecting something from me. What do you suggest when people's energy, particularly traders' energy, is running low?
It's a great question, Louise. If we look at it like the controllables that you can control with your body are the foundation. So sleep is number one. And for those who don't believe that sleep is the most important factor, well, we've done all the research with readiness and it comes out on top in terms of the number one factor that will lead to better well-being and better performance. So being able to control your sleep and get you at least 7 hours to 9 hours a night. Now, not many of us actually get to bed and within a second we're asleep. So controlling all of that, exercise is the other big one. So simple ones like try and get at least 30 minutes a day where you've got an elevated heart rate. And now that could be a brisk walk, it could be running, swimming. And again, there's so many modes to get that heart rate up. Do what you enjoy because you'll stick out a lot longer. Nutrition's massive too. So, you know, how much are we eating, when are we eating, and what are we eating are really important. That's the fuel for us to live. Even if we stayed in bed all day, we still need a certain amount of energy for our heart to keep pumping, our lungs to keep breathing, and so on and so forth. Hydration is really important. And in sport, you might see it sort of halftime of the AFL or the rugby league or union, whatever you're into, and tennis, you'll see people have a drink, or you'll see staff members weighing drink bottles to make sure that the athletes remain hydrated. So hydration plays a huge part of your ability to your cognition, your ability to make some smart decisions. So males should be up around 3 liters per day of water or high foods with a water base. And females around 2 liters a day. So, you know, I certainly struggle trying to get all that all the time. So it's an effort to get there, but you do see the difference. And balancing balancing your lifestyle, work-life balance is massive, and having a good support structure around you is huge in terms of just getting that energy, that emotional energy back. So we've got the body aspects of the body that we can control, and we can make efforts in there. We've got to make it a priority though, but certainly other things. Schedule changes are huge. Schedule your weeks where you're not you know, four nights on calls, you know, between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m., try and monitor and be smart and strategize around around your schedule to ensure that you are looking after your foundation well-being, which is looking after your body first, and then you're getting that mindset.
I love that. It's such a holistic viewpoint that you've got there, Simon. I want to ask you about a personal issue that I've noticed. When I'm run down and when I'm fatigued, my decision-making goes crazy, right? I'm very erratic, very volatile. I'm saying yes to things I shouldn't say yes to. It's almost like I'm yesing myself into oblivion. Have you seen that? Because I think sometimes it takes energy to say no and courage to stop yourself from going to bed later and later and later. It's almost like you need the clear head first. Yes. And then, what's your advice to me?
You spread yourself too thin. And you spread yourself way too thin and you don't make smart decisions across anything. So it all comes down to making it a priority for yourself. I think as a community, well-being is still a bit tokenish. Like we don't quite see, and we're very reactive in that. We wait until we're really sick till we do anything about it, but we don't see that link of well-being and performance. You learn that really, really quick in elite sport. And that was great for me early on to realize that early on. But we need to be realistic with how much and what we can do during the day. Setting boundaries, as you just said, Louise, be prepared to say no, or look, I'll get back to you on that, or I'll lock that in a couple of days. As I mentioned before, your schedule back-to-back nights is just crazy. So making sure that at least you can go every alternate night for a few nights in a row around your schedule and your trading on overseas or on the other side of Australia. But again, sleep will be everything, will be your catalyst to everything. And for those who don't believe it, which you know there will be a few, is if you've ever been jet lagged and that just that foggy feeling that you've got, that's through a lack of sleep, or if you've just been stressed and suffering anxiety and you're not sleeping, it slowly builds up and you're just in that brain fog for a lot during the day, which is very similar to that jet lag. So there you know, my God, sleep is just so important. So if you start with sleep, prioritize your own well-being and make a real effort around that and be realistic and set your boundaries during the day, you can then strategize and set up your schedules accordingly to ensure. And it can take months for you to get your schedule right and work out what areas of your life need some help and what areas of your life and what positive coping strategies there are that work for you. So stick at it. It's not like it happens, you know, in 1 or 2 days. You've got to work at it.
And you almost need constant reminders as well that, remember, this was important.
Yes, yeah. And that's what we do at Readiness is all around that with our check-ins and all of our 500 resources and everything like that. It's your own little well-being personal trainer on your shoulder to help you along the way, because, as you know, Louise, well-being isn't a linear progression. You know, life's up and down, and it needs to be checked in daily. It's not like, we need to get into that proactive mindset, not wait for things to happen. Let's nip things in the bud nice and early.
Yeah, I love that. I was actually quite anti-sleep many years ago, and there was one piece of research that came out that totally flipped me on this. It's the hypnagogic state. So I'll just describe what this is, because it's not a very well-known term. Before we actually manage to get into a sleep situation, even light sleep, we go through a part of our process where our mind seems to be making random connections. So it's almost like if you've got your subconscious and your conscious, currently there's a wall up between those two because we're awake and we're conscious. But when we start to fall asleep, this hypnagogic state merges those two arenas, so your subconscious becomes more instantly accessible. Now, sometimes that's why I'll come up with, that's why I did this wrong in that trade. Yeah. Oh, I understand. I need to add a new archetype. It should look like this for my trading to be optimal. So using sleep as a tool and regarding it in that way, I think can help that A-type person really see the advantages, because we think of sleep as downtime, almost like we shut down and nothing happens. But actually, sleep can be a tool, can't it?
Yes, sleep's the regeneration of your brain. And you know, what's really, really common is people really either struggle to fall to sleep because their mind's too busy, or they get off to sleep okay, but they wake up during the middle of the night and their brain gets busy again. So we've got a lot of strategies that we use in readiness that it's come from what we would do with elite players in terms of what strategies to use before bed to clear your mind, you know, around journaling and writing everything down and setting everything up for the next day. There's a lot of them, and it's where we can customize that for you. But yeah, it's a time to regenerate, and it's a time to make, you know, you can wake up clearer and thinking better because of the result of that, to make some smart decisions, you know, early the next day. And that's what we always say. I'm certainly a big believer in getting all of the high cognitive duties done earlier in the day, because we know, as you know, as your diurnal rhythm goes on during the rest of the day, we tend to get more and more tired and less reactive and less accurate with our decisions. So the more you can make your smart decisions and the meetings or the decisions you need to make with high cognition, start of the day seems to be the best one.
I definitely prefer the start of the day. Most of anything I do is done at the start of the day if it requires thinking. And I do think matching that thinking process when you do need a heavy load, knowing whether you're an owl or a lark, yep, can really help. There's some research actually that the people who are best at night, if they try and force themselves to trade in the very early morning, their results aren't as good, and vice versa. If you're a morning person, you're trying to trade at night, you're going against that natural rhythm. What did you call it? A diurnal rhythm.
Diurnal rhythm, yeah. Yeah. So that's where we've got a couple of peaks throughout the day that we're in tune. But as you mentioned, Louise, we're all very different. So as we mentioned before around your schedule, try and really customize your schedule to your routine. No one knows you better than yourself. So if you know that, look, I'm better at certain times of the night or day to make smart decisions, then, you know, then try and schedule as much as you can your duties that you need to do around those times where you know that, you know, I'm firing on all cylinders then.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about something, you know, with a lot of these sessions, Simon, they end up being such good personal advice for me. So I'm bearing my soul here. I want to talk about visualization, because there almost seems to be a fulcrum in a seesaw where some people say focus on the now, and they're the ones that are saying, you know, just concentrate on what's happening right in front of you. And then you've got the other group that are saying, have a look at your future self, be led by your future self. Now, I know that athletes have to struggle with this because it's where they're at now, but it's also visualizing where they could be. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think it's useful to visualize a future self, or should we just be focusing on the now?
I think both. Absolutely. Like, it's what we do know is you can't control what's happened in the past. So, you know, the sooner you can release that, the more attention you'll be able to have for the now and what you want to do in the future. But certainly, you know, around a busy mind and making smart decisions in that moment, mindfulness is a great way of clearing the mind and focusing on the now. But mindfulness, which is a form of meditation, isn't for everyone. I think sometimes meditation can be sort of shoved down everyone's throat. And if I certainly see the benefits in it, a lot of people do. I've tried and tried and tried, but it doesn't work for me. So my forms of mindfulness is exercise, being around mates, and where I can just not have to think.
Basically, you're right.
You just don't have to think. And you're in the moment and you're enjoying where you are. So that's staying in the moment is really, really important there. And if you struggle with or trying to find what activities and what mindfulness stuff that can help you in that, is just, what do you enjoy? That's the simple thing, a starting point there. But give some meditation a go. But visualization is super important for the future. If we don't know, I look at it as goal setting. Like, if we don't know where we're heading, well, how do we know what we need to do now to get there? So You know, we could be the most talented person in the world, a really good work rate and work ethic, but when if we don't have a positive mindset on where we are, well, then you know, talent and work rate goes out the window. So, I see visualizations is getting yourself into a positive mindset, which will then set up yourself to be able to implement your work ethic and then implement your talent in that area to obviously make some really good decisions and perform well. So short answer, both. Stay in the moment when you need to, but don't be afraid to dream and visualize where you want to go and put steps in place and goals in place to reach that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. I want to pick up on a couple of things that you mentioned there because, wow, that was really jam-packed and I loved it so much. One of the things you mentioned is that meditation is not for everybody, and you're quite right. They've actually shown, and for those of you who are guilty non-meditators out there, let me just soothe your frazzled trading mind with this. They've shown that for 16% of people, meditation actually has the opposite impact. Rather than slowing things down, it actually speeds things up. And it doesn't bring on a panic attack in itself. But if you think of the symptoms of a panic attack, those are physiological symptoms that some people experience while meditating. Yeah. So, Simon, thank you for reminding me of that research.
I've got even a story of a mate really recently, actually. He said, oh, God, I really struggle with meditating. You know, he's your classic blue-collar middle-aged male. You know, what's this well-being? And I said, mate, don't just give it away. I said, he goes, yeah. I love just getting on my bike and going for a ride. I said, mate, there it is. There's your meditation right there. You know, I love this parts of, I love all parts of the year and seasons, but even in winter, putting the fire on and just sitting in front of the fire and, I don't know, probably listening to music or whatever or watching TV, but simple things like that. Get out in the garden, being with the kids. It's mindfulness can be anything that you just, where you switch your busy mind off, and whatever works for you, find it and keep doing it.
Absolutely. I think that's the key. I know one of the traders in my realm, a member of my mentor program, he is an ex-army guy and he was very upset that he couldn't meditate. And I'm like, well, just listen to the way that you're talking about it. It isn't your thing. It's okay just to release that. Yeah. And the other aspect I was thinking about as you were talking with future self is Fidelity did a study and it showed that if they show people pictures of themselves aged up by 10, 15, 20 years, so that it was their face, it was their photo, but that filter that they put over it just makes you look older. Yep. And then they asked people to make financial decisions. They actually made better financial decisions. And what they looked at to explain why this would occur, apparently, when we're talking about our future self, we in our MRI'd brain, so the physiological construct, when we look at it, we are thinking that we're talking about somebody else when it's a future self. So we're dumping future Louise into that decision that current Louise just made, because future Louise will be better off to make that happen, won't she? It's like it's a separate person. But if we actually look at a photo of ourselves aged up, then those actually get closer to us realizing that our future self is actually going to be us one day. I love home. Studies like that.
it hits home. We're all very visual, so if we that realism hits in when we can actually see what, oh my God, this is actually going to happen and it is me.
I think another aspect to future self work, which I'm very, very much into, is that sometimes our future self can be our best mentor, because we work out where we actually want to be and where we are now, and then we scaffold and bridge that gap between where we are now and our future self. Which brings me on to the thought of modeling and mentoring. Modeling where we're copying somebody's behavior and somebody who is a skilled performer in order to improve our performance. And mentoring is where we've got somebody who's further ahead, who's giving us guidance. I'd love to hear your thoughts about modeling and mentoring and what role they play in high performance.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we can even take it to well-being, in that we've at Readiness, we follow learn, live, lead. So if we are to make some a positive behaviour change and teach that to others around mental health and physical health and sleep health and workplace health, if we can learn a little bit about it ourselves, we don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar or anything like that. But if you were to make a positive behaviour change in nutrition or exercise or your sleep habits or your work-life balance or your the influence you have on your job, if you can understand a bit of the science behind it and what you're actually trying to do and understand that, you'll make smarter decisions down the track when you're implementing that. And that's like your foundation to making that behavior change and then practicing it yourself. So live it yourself. I sort of give the analogy, it's not like in 20 plus years in sport, I've never employed a strength coach who weighs about 50 kilos and has never lifted a weight in their life. I mean, they'd be laughed out of the gym. So you need to practice what you preach and understand and live it yourself once you've learned a little bit about it. Once you've learned it, you live it yourself, then you can lead others. And that's where that modeling comes in. So, if you don't make a change to any aspect of your life, well, you get the same outcome as what you've always had. So educating yourself, learning about it yourself, living it yourself, and you'll get those followers along. And that can be adapted to well-being. It can be adapted to anything and become an expert in that area. That's why, again, you train for certain things or you practice certain things. Deliberate practice, you want to keep doing that until that skill becomes innate and it's just a reaction and you know exactly what you're doing. So what we sort of see with Readiness as well, we've got, data points that we look at across hundreds of thousands of surveys across many, many sectors within Australia. And the ones that we see with job demands and exhaustion are really bad. The ways to get out or improve that job demands and exhaustion is through work-life balance, good leadership within your workplace. And also, as what we've mentioned a lot today, is around the positive body coping strategies. So to get out of that poor, if you've got high job demands and you're exhausted and you're leading towards burnout, work-life balance, improve your ability and your positive coping strategies around all aspects of body and, good positive leadership around your place of work or even outside of there, go a long way into improving those aspects.
Are employers taking this seriously?
No, I don't think they are. And it's certainly this in a number of states in Australia now, and it'll be Australia-wide quite soon, is the psychosocial hazards workplace health and safety legislation is coming in. So what that's looking at is, the psychosocial hazards within the workplace are around job demands, job control, the environment that you're in, appropriate supervisor support and leadership, appropriate strategies for change management. Because one thing, will lead to a huge spike in anxiety amongst individuals or a group is change. So having appropriate change management strategies in the workplace, and obviously, the classic ones and the harassment and bullying. So it's legislation. It's here, and it's going to keep ramping up. So, at Readiness, we've been all over that. We've been operating in that space for a couple of years now and getting a lot more clients banging on the door going, what is all of this legislation? We need to jump on board and learn from you guys. So, and I mean, that's looking at, identifying these psychosocial hazards within the workplace, being able to assess them, being able to provide education, resources and experts to control those, and then being able to monitor those over a long period of time. So it's not just like a quarterly sort of touch point, it's weekly, and then having 24/7 access to education and experts and resources around those hazards is where everything's going. So if employers aren't taking it seriously, they're going to have to very soon, now pretty much with all the legislation that's in and coming in, yeah.
Simon, where can people learn more about you?
Readiness.com.au. Everything's come from out of sport into the workplace. We've got our school program as well, but all our info at and inquiries at on readiness.com.au. So check that out and we can help you perform. And as I said, Louise, we're very holistic. We're not just, there's many aspects and areas of our life that can impede and improve performance. And we're all about making we can maximize that and not only improve the workplace, but improve what happens outside the workplace with your personal lives as well.
Yeah, I love it. So if you could put your key self-care tips into a nutshell for us,
yep,
so that my traders have got something very specific to follow, maybe you could do that for us right now.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, self-care are the things that you can control. And there are negative self-care strategies out there, like, you know, when you're stressed, taking excessive alcohol or drugs or whatever, we need to obviously get away from that. But as we've mentioned many times, it starts with the body. So if we can get our sleep, our exercise, our nutrition, our hydration, work-life balance, you know, good social support, and you know, even looking at a Harvard Business Review, recent one that looks at you know, the differentiation between general public and high performers, you know, the three main aspects of that is ability, which obviously we were chatting before around talent, drive, which is your work ethic or work rate, as we spoke about, but social skills is another one. So being able to socialize and have a good aspect and concept of friends around you within the community goes a long way as well. So look after yourself, control the controllables, and work out what best works for you around recovering it from a physical point of view and an emotional point of view, because we're all different and we've all got different ways to do it, and it doesn't happen overnight, but stick with it.
Yeah, I love it.
Help me too, yeah.
I think that often traders ask me about sabotage, self-sabotage. How do I know if I'm about to self-sabotage? And of course, in the market, self-sabotage usually means that you're going to lose money, which has a very real impact. What you're talking about here, this holistic approach to self-care, it's helping all of my traders avoid SAD, sad behaviors. This is self-aggressive and destructive behavior. Now, for me, I know when I'm reaching for chocolate far too much that I'm probably on a slippery slope here because things are not going well. Yep. When Night Girl takes over and I'm just staying up later and later, and when I'm starting to snap at people, all of these types of things are self-aggressive and destructive. So this is exactly what this interview has been about. Simon Carney from readiness.com.au, thank you so much for your time. You beautiful man. I so appreciate your input. Last time I interviewed you, you were recovering from Ross River fever, and I do really appreciate everything that you've done for us.
Me not picking up the triggers early enough, Louise, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, we need to learn those lessons. Well,
actually, and the mosquito bite that I received at the same time. So, yeah.
That'll do it.
That'll
absolutely
do it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Now, for those of you listening as an audio on talkingtrading.com.au, just know that we're also on youtube.com/trading game. So you can refer to the show notes. The show notes are actually notes that I write about the people that I'm interviewing and a bit about the topic, and also any references that I mentioned during the show. Those show notes are available on talkingtrading.com.au. Any parting words, Simon?
Look after yourselves, look after those around you, and give yourself the opportunity to perform at your best. And if we can help in any way, as I said, readiness.com.au, we'll certainly get you on the right track.
Magic. Thanks so much for your
time. Thanks, Louise. Looking forward to another chat soon. See ya.